There's no need these forms of financial but also productive capital for territorial exclusivity, for colonial administration. There is no need for that because the interconnection between the financial and the productive capital is so great and pivots on the dollar that control can be exercised in a variety of ways that do not require a colonial administrator. And that's how much of the power of the core expresses itself over other parts of the core and the periphery. Very, very, very important to understand that because people automatically think if there is imperialism, there must be colonies. No need for colonies. Colonies are expensive. If you can control without colonial administration, you do. But control there is.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to BungaCast, the global politics podcast at the end of history. I'm Alex Hocule in São Paulo, Brazil. Co-host George Hoare is in London. Hello, George.
Hey.
And delighted to welcome on to the podcast Kostas Lapafitsas, who is professor of economics at the School of Oriental and African Studies in London, but also has a long career of political activity, which people can look up if they wish. Kostas, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure, and look forward to our discussion.
Yes, likewise, because Kostas has an essay in the New Left Review at the start of this year called A Topography of the New Dollar Imperialism. It briefly situates us in the history of theories of imperialism from Hobson and Lenin all the way to late 20th century formulations. But something new is going on, argues Kostas in the article. And this is intimately tied to financialization and especially dollar dominance. I should mention that Kostas also has pieces on this new imperialism in the Socialist Register, on Trump's chaotic imperialism, and a forthcoming piece in Monthly Review, which is a more political version of the New Left Review article, as I understand it. That will be out in a couple of months, but we will link to all of these if links are available in the show notes, and I urge you to check them out, listener. I would also like to gesture at some earlier episodes, ones that we did some years back, on the dollar empire, episodes 139 and episode 142, with guests Yakov Fagan and Dominic Loesder, and then the second one being with Daniel Bessner, analyzing the feedback effects of the dollar system and the political economy of the US dollar, and of course its geopolitical implications. So those are also linked in the show notes if you'd like to go and check those out. Now, you, listener, may also be thinking, oh man, I really hope they talk about how dollar imperialism will be affected by the Iran war, the closure of the Straits of Hormuz, the pricing of some oil in yuan, not dollar. Well, lucky you, we will. But first, we need to set up how this new dollar imperialism actually works before trying to apply it to the current situation with the war in Iran. George.
Yeah, thanks, Alex. And yeah, just to echo Alex's welcome, Kostas, to you. Yeah, really delighted to be chatting through what I think is a really important article with you. So yeah, just to kick things off, there's enough questions that we could ask on this article for a whole book or several books. But just to start, I think at the beginning, why do you think that imperialism is an important term today? Does it make sense? Is it an anachronism? You know, we're increasingly told the world is globalized and networked, and you know, we should forget about things like imperialism. I'm guessing this might not be entirely your point of view on things.
Well, we are no longer told that. We used to be told that we live in a globalized international soup. Basically, all of us will be elements of this similar thing, and we will all move from onwards and upwards and happily ever after. And we've been told this for many years, and during that time when this was dominant, the globalization narrative was dominant, imperialism fell by the wayside. And not only in polite conversation circles, but among the left and so on, we stopped referring to it. I only need to mention Negri and Hart to make my point. Who would argue that now? Who would actually possibly argue that now when you look at how Trump's United States is conducting itself? And I don't just mean Iran, which we will discuss, I mean, also Greenland. I mean, what's happening in Russia and Ukraine and so on. So imperialism has come back. Militarization is afoot. The drive to war is stronger than at any other time. And quite naturally, people have gone back to these ideas, these concepts that used to be very, very influential and very powerful, and they're seeking answers. Are we witnessing a return to the world pre-1914? Is this what's happening? Are we witnessing a reemergence of imperial powers across the world, reestablishing empires? What is going on? That is a key question. And interestingly enough, I'll tell you, one thing that struck me very powerfully the last few months, a lot of young people who are interested in radical ideas and counter-system ideas have also noticed that this is going on, and that the standard concepts that we use for many years, you know, environment, gender, and so on, are not good enough for answering what's going on. You need political economy. You need some well-established concepts that come from the deep traditions of Marxist theory, and mm-hmm. we need to discuss imperialism in that light.
So, no, I think it's a good way to frame it. I don't think I probably represented the straw man globalist type very, very convincingly. And it does seem like that perspective is probably, yeah, fallen by the wayside. So the starting point of your analysis of the, you know, the new dollar imperialism is that the two, so financial capital and productive capital are interlocked today in extremely important ways. And I think it is really helpful to start with the basics, particularly since, as you know, mentioned to you previously, this piece does feel like it's trying to lay out a framework, and which is then applied elsewhere. So yeah, maybe could you just, you know, talk us through that kind of starting point of the interlocking and the complex and relationship between financial and productive capital?
Let me first of all say that imperialism is a very complex historical phenomenon, right? It goes back a long way. And it's very easy to fall into kind of historical generalizations when you talk about it. And let me first of all say that I don't believe that there can be a general theory of imperialism that explains what's happening now, mm-hmm. what used to happen 100 years ago, 300 years ago, or in the days of Alexander the Great, right? Or whoever. I don't think that you can have one, a theory that does that. Here we're talking, from my perspective, about what I like to call capitalist imperialism. In other words, the imperialism that we see in a dominant global capitalist system, the drive to war, the expansionism, the national oppression, and so on. So it's a complex thing. It incorporates geopolitics. It has an ideology attached to it, and so on. Because it's a complex thing that does all that has all these aspects, it's very easy to criticize it from a variety of standpoints. Very easy. And many people do. So if you were to criticize imperialism as we see today simply from a moral standpoint, you don't have to be an economist and you don't have to be a Marxist. The Pope is also criticizing it. You know, he just came out and criticized that. And there have been no end of criticisms of imperialism on this basis. What makes the tradition I come from, I believe, distinctive and interesting in this regard is that it connects it to economics. It connects it to the fundamental economic functioning of capitalism, what it understands to be the fundamental economic functioning of capitalism, and tries to give an argument as to why the conduct of the basic units of the capitalist economy will lead to geopolitical phenomena, which include war, which include territorial expansion, oppression, and so on. That's what makes it interesting, and that's what makes it lasting. And it's in this way that I approach the question of imperialism today. It's in this methodological way that I approach the issue of imperialism today. Because, of course, when you look at it today, when you look at what the United States is doing, when you look at the conflicts that have emerged and the tensions between Europe and the United States, or between Europe and between Russia and Ukraine and Russia and the rest of the West, and so on, when you look at that, you realize that the phenomena, geopolitical as they are quite distinct. You don't get a reproduction.